You're listening to Scott Wheeler and Through the Looking Glass on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hello and welcome to TNT Radio's Through the Looking Glass. I'm Scott Wheeler. We've got a packed show today. Coming up in just a few moments, we'll be joined by Mark Morano, who is the editor and publisher of The Climate Depot. He's got a new book out, and it's about the Great Reset. We're going to talk to him and ask him some questions. It'll be very informative. And for the meantime, for those in the United States and those around the United States and those in other Western countries, you're probably thinking that things have gone absolutely mad here. Over 50 Venezuelan migrants being sent to a vacation spot for extremely wealthy white people in on Martha's Vineyard Island, just off the coast of Massachusetts. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. Also, before we get to Mark Morano, but right now, there is breaking news on January 6th, the January 6th investigation. As you know, I've been investigating this for since it happened, about a year and a half. And one of my colleagues at the Epic Times, Joe Hanneman, broke some news based on an investigation that we both had been on. And if you recall, Hanneman was on the show a couple of weeks ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago, talking about a documentary he was one of the for which he had produced. And we ran into this point, this. There was a person, I interviewed two people on January 6th, immediately after they left the Capitol. It was early on, and it was within moments of Ashley Babbitt being shot and killed inside the Capitol. And I spoke to these two people. They claimed they had just come from Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House office. They showed me a bottle of, I actually took their photo, showed me a bottle of wine and an autographed baseball that they said they took out of Pelosi's office. The female in the photo that I interviewed, who did not want to give her name at the time, told me that she sat at Pelosi's desk and smoked a joint. That's a quote. Well, at the time, what happened, these were two of the first two people that I spoke to and interviewed. I took a photo. They didn't want to give up their names, but within minutes, people were running from the side of the Capitol yelling that a woman had just been shot in the face. Well, it turned out it was the neck, and it was Ashley Babbitt. And so nobody knew who was covering January 6th at that time. No one really knew what it was going to end up being, this huge, huge, gigantic political crisis in the United States, ginned up mostly by the Democrat Party, who's seeking to gain a political advantage in using it, exploiting it. And so there was a lot of chaos. I actually covered the event. I came to Washington at that time for this reason. I'd been covering Antifa riots and BLM, Black Lives Matter riots. And I had noticed that at Trump rallies, Antifa would show up and provoke Trump supporters into goad them into fights. And it had been happening. Some people had been stabbed and some had been beat up. And so I showed up for that, to cover the potential clashes between Trump supporters and Antifa and sometimes BLM. So no one knew anything about a potential riot at the Capitol that ended up happening. And it was a riot, you know, without assigning blame of who started it or who were the first in, because that is in question. But I was there. And so I took the photograph of this two people, the man in the photo, and you can see it at the Epic Times, under suspicious actors who conspired to raid Capitol on January 6th, never arrested. We still don't know the identity of the man, but we have identified the female in the photo, who said she smoked a joint at Pelosi's desk, told me that. It is a woman named Megan Paradise, young woman, probably in her mid-20s, maybe late 20s. She looks very young, and she has shown up in the same basic garb, a megaphone in hand, a red, white, and blue kind of theatrical tie, and a Trump hat. She's been showing up, had been showing up prior to January 6th at different places, and, you know, in support of Trump, almost in a dramatic sense, almost like she's supposed to show up for work there. It's a very interesting case. Nobody knows much about it. She's never been arrested. There's photographs of her in Pelosi's office with something she's smoking in her hand, in her mouth. It's in the actually in this article too, as does my photo of her also appears. And she apparently, according to witnesses, she was urging people to join us in this thing outside the doors of the Capitol. So she was encouraging people. Now, Paradise was photographed sitting at a desk at Pelosi's office on January 6th. She sat adjacent to Richard Bigo Barnett, whose photo with his feet on the desk went viral after news photographer asked him to pose. Barnett faces some half dozen federal charges for his alleged January 6th actions. He turned down a plea deal. This is according to Mr. Hanneman's piece in the Epoch Times. He turned down a plea deal that would have meant up to 87 months in prison. Now, he's right next to Megan Paradise, who has not been arrested. At the top of the East Steps, according to witnesses, Paradise chanted, "Take their shields, take their shields." Just another suspicious actor known only as Goose and Gray stole a riot shield from a police officer. She chanted, "Break the door, break the door, break the door." Epoch Times contributor Scott Wheeler took a photograph of Paradise on the Capitol steps after she emerged from the speaker's office. The woman held a baseball. We covered all that. The Epoch Times was unable to reach Paradise for comment. A message left at the office of her father has not been returned. According to Lynette Carolla, Paradise's aunt, apparently, her niece flew back to Washington and met with the FBI agents in the days after January 6th. She was apologetic and she was honest, according to Carolla, said during an episode of her podcast for crying out loud. That's Carolla's podcast. And you know, she just sat at the desk, wrote a note, and then she laughed. The FBI want to see all the text messages. So she met with the FBI. This Megan Paradise was not arrested, has not been charged. There's no evidence that she's been arrested. She actually was one of the first people in the Capitol. She was encouraging others to go into the Capitol. It remains a mystery to this day why she and the man who was with her have not been arrested and charged. We don't know the answer. I'm not alleging that she is a plant because I don't know. But what I am saying is there is a lot of suspicious things surrounding the January 6th riot that just has not been explained. Of course, Ray Epps being the preeminent example that a lot of people have been talking about. The fact that we covered a few weeks ago that the FBI didn't bother interviewing people right around the locations where the supposed pipe bombs were planted, took them 5 months to interview people who might have seen something on that day. It just simply does not sound like they were taking the pipe bomb incidences very seriously, like they were really looking for the guy. The first thing you do is find somebody immediately who may have been in the vicinity, people who lived within 100 meters of where the pipe bomb was placed, were not interviewed for 5 months by the FBI. It leads to more curiosity. It leads to more questions. And that's one of the reasons why people are scratching their heads and don't feel like they're being told the truth by either the media, which continues to call any questions about January 6th conspiracy theories, and the political class, which refuses to say anything about it or talk about it other than the Democrats' propaganda January 6th hearing, which has been nothing except an attempt to gain political advantage. This is why people don't trust their government. This is why people in the United States do not trust their government. And it's for very good reason. I am not a conspiracy theorist in the least. I've debunked a lot of conspiracies throughout my journalism career. But I'll tell you something. I have many, many questions about this. There are many questions that have to be answered, and we can't get answers. And I've talked to a lot of people. I've interviewed hundreds of people with regard to January 6th, and we're not getting answers, only more questions. And speaking of questions, many might wonder why a simple act of sending 50 poor people to a vacation paradise where the wealthiest people in the world go to vacation in the summer, Martha's Vineyard, an island just off the coast of Massachusetts, why a guy who gave 50 underprivileged immigrants from Venezuela a free trip there has come under withering assaults, verbal assaults, especially on Twitter, by Democrats. Of course, I'm referring to Ron DeSantis, who sent a plane load of 50 Venezuelan immigrants to Martha's Vineyard earlier this week. And for that, he has been verbally assaulted and called a kidnapper, human smuggler. I'm not kidding. And not by rank and file Democrats, by the Democrat leadership. The White House spokeswoman, Jean-Pierre, herself said that this was kidnapping and human smuggling, that he acted inconsistent with human smugglers. She said this about Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, who sent 50 Venezuelan migrants to the whitest place on earth. Now, I pointed out, if you follow me on Twitter, and you can do that by going to @newscapgroup, you can follow me on Twitter, @newscapgroup. You can see what I've responded. I've asked questions. For example, I said to a Democrat congressman from Florida who was harshly critical, I said, you know, we get lectured constantly by you Democrats that diversity is our strength. Martha's Vineyard is 89% white. Maybe, just maybe, DeSantis was trying to help Martha's Vineyard become stronger, right? Because they need some diversity. It's 89% white. They have said some of the worst things. I mean, not just one, but you can see hundreds of them on Twitter. And again, these are people in positions of authority, people in the media, elected Democrats, Democrat hacks, party hacks, all writing the most vile attacks on DeSantis, calling him evil. He's been called evil many times by people on the left and in the Democrat Party. And I'm wondering why. All he did was move migrants to a place where they claimed they love migrants. As many have pointed out, there are signs all over Edgartown, Martha's Vineyard. We welcome everybody. This is a place of love. This is a place of friendship. We love immigrants. We love migrants. Okay, well, now you've got some. And what did they do? Within hours, literally less than 48, the governor of Massachusetts ordered the National Guard to come and take the 50 migrants somewhere else in Massachusetts. off of Martha's Vineyard. Now, leaving me to ask the obvious question, does that make the governor of Massachusetts also a human smuggler? You have to ask that question. Why is the Biden administration allowed to fly migrants wherever they want to under the cover of darkness all over the country? And nobody says a word, but let one governor fly some to Martha's Vineyard, the lily white enclave that voted about 88% voted for Biden on Martha's Vineyard. If there's any place that should be welcoming immigrants, it's Martha's Vineyard. It is bizarre. It's like they have no understanding of the world around them, like no one's going to look at them and notice the spastic duplicity of this, of the signs they hold up. And diversity is our strength. Well, diversity for thee, not for me, apparently. We're going to take a short time out. When we come back, we'll have Mark Morano. He is the atomic bomb against the global warming and environmental alarmists. We'll talk to Mark in just one moment.
Rick Munn on TNT Radio.
Some good news. Children in the UK aged 5 to 11 will no longer be offered COVID jabs. Mm-hmm. The jab was also banned from children who had not turned 5 by the end of last month. You know, it's not so long ago there was clinics popping up everywhere and people were urging them to take their children for the old shot. Now it's no longer on the table. And call me old-fashioned, but if I was a parent and I'd been coerced and sort of gaslighted into getting my kid injected and then all of a sudden the facility's not there anymore, I would certainly be asking why. And what about my kid then? She's just or he's just had their jab, but now they're taking them off the table. Why?
Rick Munn is locked and loaded on today's News Talk TNT Radio.
The story behind the biggest election takeover in history.
We're only now being able to finally confirm exactly how this worked.
Mark Zuckerberg and his wife are donating more money to local governments ahead of the election. $100 million on top of a $300 million gift.
The most money any individual has ever spent to win a presidential campaign in the history of our country.
The election was bought way before Election Day.
They stole it fair and square. They changed the voting rules in the middle of the game.
A nation divided, rigged.
It was a rigged election. People have to find out what happened
at SalemNow.com.
This is where you get your daily ration of high-velocity conversation. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to TNT Radio's Through the Looking Glass. I'm Scott Wheeler. Again, you can follow me on Twitter at NewsCap Group, at NewsCap Group. Right now, joining the broadcast is Mark Morano. He's author of the book, the new book, just out, The Great Reset. He's also the publisher of The Climate Depot. He's been an investigative journalist for decades, and he's actually spent some time at this great television broadcast called American Investigator Television Magazine, where he received some extraordinary mentorship in journalism. Is that right, Mark?
Yeah, yes, it is. You're flashing back to the 1990s. Yes, I was the junior reporter to your senior reporter at American Investigator. The smaller budget, 60 minutes.
Yes, it was a conservative version of 60 Minutes. I should revise my remark because I was joking. I probably learned more from Mark than he ever learned from me. But we have worked together for about 25 years now.
Yeah, well
congratulations on the book.
Oh, thank you. You had the tough job because you had to go in and argue for salaries and benefits, and you had to deal with the management at our. So that's what I really appreciated more than anything.
and we were poor in those days, so I didn't do a very good job.
Yeah, they always say, you know, that was I think my opening salary was $30,000 a year back in the 90s there. So that was maybe it's even 28,000. I can't remember the exact number, but it was that range.
It was terrible. When I first started there as special correspondent, I was making 24, and then I made slightly more than you, like 1,000 or two a year more. Anyway, we did, when you go back and look at the work, especially the work you did on Amazon rainforest and on environmental issues, even then, it was groundbreaking, and few others were even coming close to what we were doing in those days.
Well, what we were doing actually was we were laying the foundation, explaining to the public what we didn't even know what it was called at the time, but it really was a version of the Great Reset. It was the Great Reset being enacted, whether it was environmental policy with unelected bureaucrats and these big agencies just taking away people's freedom and property rights, or whether in your case, it was exposing what was happening with China and the collusion with the Chinese government. And China has become the major player in the world today, and particularly as it pertains to the Great Reset, to the climate agenda, because what we're doing, the United States is shutting down. We're collapsing our food supply. We're collapsing our transportation. We're collapsing our energy. We're collapsing our free speech. If you remember, we always had that argument back in the 90s. Well, we got to help China and share all this technology and information because they'll become more like us when we give them all this and they grow economically. Here's the problem, Scott, and you know this to be true. We've become more like China instead of China becoming more like us. We're now following the social credit system. We're now going to be dependent on China for energy, for all of our goods and services. We're not going to be capable of producing our own energy if this green agenda goes through.
That's you make a good point. And going back, you even with regard to environmental issues, I recall probably 12 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, 10 to 12 years ago, the New York Times columnist, Friedman, who said, openly opined that he wishes we could be more like China. And so here we are. But in the 90s, as you were pointing out, the environmentalism was the basis for confiscating people's land or telling them they can't develop land or grow crops because of a wetland or something like this. That's now grown into something huge on the global scale, and that's what the Great Reset is about, is it not?
Yes, in my book, The Great Reset: Global Elites and the Permanent Pandemic, I actually go exactly what you just said. I go through the history, and here's the way I try to explain the simple appeal. What is the Great Reset? Okay. The Great Reset is essentially the concept that began in the United States under Woodrow Wilson, 1913 as president. They called it the managerial state, the administrative state, essentially taking over huge functions of what had previously been in democracy. This was great appeal to politicians, to power-hungry bureaucrats, to their allies in academia. And the idea was that America would be ruled by unelected experts who knew better than the American people. And so all we had to worry about is we could just elect our leaders, but the leaders wouldn't have the real power. The real power would be in the bureaucracy. They would determine transportation, energy, communication. And so you fast forward a little bit, Roosevelt had an aide named Stuart Chase, who was his kitchen cabinet advisor. And Stuart Chase actually promoted a version of the Great Reset in his 1942 book called about the New Deal. This was the architect of Roosevelt's New Deal, but it actually called for, in the 30s and 40s, Roosevelt's top economic advisor called for government propaganda, shutting down essentially free speech, nationalizing energy, nationalizing transportation, nationalizing our food supply. So all this happens, and just to give you a quick fast forward, we're watching this in real time happen. Ever since March 2020, that was the catalyst that accelerated a century plus of this movement to basically move power and control upwards into fewer and fewer hands. So when 2020 rolls around, the COVID lockdowns hit. And by the way, we were told to follow China. The WHO did a sham investigation. Go to China. We're going to see what they're doing and give a recommendation. And they came back after 2 days. We've seen the future. It's China. If you want to beat a virus, lock down like China. You know, as we saw them nailing people in their homes in hazmat suits. So essentially, what the COVID lockdowns gave the intellectual progressive class was what they'd been striving for decades through the environmental movement, overpopulation, climate. They wanted essentially to end democracy because democracy was messy. Democracy thwarted their agenda, but they didn't have to worry anymore. Once March 2020 hit and Donald Trump was duped by Fauci et al., we now know that Deborah Birx, the White House, they literally lied to Donald Trump about 15 days to slow the spread. Once we fell into that COVID emergency in the 2 weeks to flatten the curve, all hell broke loose because the dreams of Justin Trudeau, who said he had great admiration for China, for Tom Friedman, the pages in New York Times talking about China can just impose what's politically good for their people without the messiness of democracy. The UN climate chiefs praising China's central command, centralized control, you know, Obama administration officials, all of this praise for China, lockdowns gave the once free West, one party Chinese style authoritarianism. And that's what Jane Fonda meant when she said COVID was God's gift to the left. So that's where we are. And that's why China's so important in this whole thing, because you mentioned a minute ago about our regulations here in America, the whole idea of this, the woke environmental social governance coming out of the Great Reset, and John Kerry's for it, and John Kerry goes to all these boards, and BlackRock CEO Larry Fink, and everyone's pushing this as a mandatory thing. They don't apply the same standards to China. In other words, if you're a U.S. oil driller, unless you have pronouns or identify as a woman, you're not going to get a bank loan from anyone from a major bank at this point, unless you can have some other woke cultural score, a facet to up your ESG score. But at the same token, none of this is applied to China. We get 90% of our solar panels from there. If we go mandate electric cars, we're getting the cobalt with underage kids. You have human rights violations in China. They have the lowest environmental standards. They're given a complete pass. Why? Because essentially they own the NBA, they own Disney, they're buying out politicians, they're second to Bill Gates buying up U.S. farmland. So we all like a competition. Bill Gates is the single largest farmland owner in the U.S. China's a close second, and there's a worry about a Chinese land monopoly. But you know, in that battle, I have to say, I think I actually, who do you favor winning that, Bill Gates or China? I think I actually favor China winning that battle because it's going to be probably easier to defeat than someone like Bill Gates. And Bill Gates' agenda, of course, is to follow the climate agenda, which ends high-yield agriculture, and it will also push synthetic beef. That's what Bill Gates is all about. And synthetic beef is different than the Impossible Burger you see at Burger King. That's made out of vegetable oil processed meat. The synthetic beef that they're investing billions of dollars in, that Bill Gates is doing, I call it the Great Food Reset. They get stem cells from a cow or a chicken. They bring it in the lab. They get fetal blood from a dead cow or dead chicken. And then scientists work on this goo for months. And it's sort of like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. It grows some kind of hybrid blob in the lab and it has no immune system. And you got to keep bacteria and diseases away. And then they start adding, you know, artificial stuff, coloring, and they work on texture. And the blob keeps growing and growing, and the stem cells. And they're actually calling it meat because it is an animal byproduct. And then they can put this with a 3D printer and print it out. Bill Gates now says openly, as America's largest single farmland owner, that he wants to see all wealthy nations, obviously Europe, Canada, Australia, US, eating only synthetic beef in the near future, you know, once it becomes widely available.
It wasn't that long ago that lab-grown meat was a joke. I remember there's an episode of this two-season show called Better Off Ted. It's about a big corporation, and they have these top scientists, and they were trying to grow meat in a lab, and it was, you know, supposed to be very funny. It was a blob. It was ugly. Nobody would have considered ingesting it in any way. But now we actually see it. I mean, at the grocery store, you have to watch and make sure you don't, if you're looking to grab some hamburgers, that you don't accidentally grab the plant-based crap.
That's plant-based. At least that's more, even the CNN nutritionist denounced that. It's processed. It's disgusting. It's high fat. It gives you bloatation and gas. Even the nutritionists say that's no good. You're much better off with lean meat. But synthetic meat is a whole different animal.
It is. All of this just seems so strange from any perspective. And it is, we're in this period where people are very confused. They don't trust, in the United States, I should say, be more specific. People are very confused. They don't trust their government. They're not sure who to trust. They know they can't trust their news media because it's basically an arm of the Democrat Party. And the government, Democrats run the government in Washington, D.C. It doesn't matter who's president. Doesn't matter who has control of Congress. Basically, what the Democrat Party, what you would describe as the Democrat Party, the what you can call it deep state or whatever, they control the levers of power here, no matter who's in office. And
yeah, in fact,
nobody knows who to trust, right?
No, in fact, today on your exactly on your point at my website, Climate Depot, I have two articles up: Checkbook Journalism, Bought and Paid For Climate News. NPR has announced a partnership with Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg's foundation and the Rockefeller Foundation. They'll be funding NPR's Climate Desk. Now, this follows on the heels of the Associated Press announcing earlier this year about having, hiring, was it 100 new reporters or some $8 million grant from the Rockefeller Center. Now, this follows on top of Bill Gates, who's now been estimated to give $300 million plus to establishment corporate media, pumps out tens of millions of dollars annually to buy positive media. So when you see Bill Gates on NPR and PBS and they're being interviewed, this is the reason you never see a hostile question, hostile anything toward Bill Gates. He's literally bought and paid the media. They're doing the same thing on climate. They're doing the same thing, I'm sure, on a host of other issues. People don't trust the media. This is all tenets of the Great Reset. And the idea here is the Great Reset states, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. Well, hey, that's been going on for years. The UN had a Vancouver Declaration that came out against private property rights. And guess the reasons why? It creates wealth, concentration of wealth, and it creates inequity. So you can't own private property because that's not woke, that's not just. And so the World Economic Forum, you'll own nothing, be happy, you'll have no privacy, and life will never be better. The US will no longer be a superpower. Meat will be a rare treat. Climate change will be the number one priority. And they actually lay these out in a slick video. They're calling for a great reset of capitalism, collapse the current system, build back up in their sustainable World Economic Forum, Davos corporate vision. And that vision, very simply, it's a version of fascism, but it's called 21st century fascism, because as Ronald Reagan in 1980 warned of the dangers of big government, the problem was is that corporate government fascism came in the back door as we were guarding the front door against big government. And we find out this is much worse. So big tech censorship is government censorship. You have the Biden administration ordering these people off, the list of people off social media. Big tech comes back and says, we've done it. What else? And they go, well, get out this website. We're on it. I mean, this is literally violating our First Amendment rights. But this is all in league. Again, going back to Roosevelt's advisor, who had called for a government propaganda arm and suppressing of free speech, for nationalizing. And ultimately, where we're headed with all of this, we're headed for all these shortages and chaos. And Vladimir Lenin said during the Tsarist Russia Bolshevik Revolution, when he was fighting him, the worse, the better. In other words, create as much chaos as possible. That way, government can step in, and they're prepared to step in and say, obviously, the energy sector can't be left in private hands. Look at this. We have shortages. Obviously, our food supply is a disaster. Look at this. We have shortages. Obviously, our transportation system's a mess. We need to step in. This is how they do it. They're collapsing our current system, what was left of the free market system, to impose a nationalist government thing. It's not going to be like traditional socialism, but it's going to be a government corporate collusion that we've never seen on the scale, even in Mussolini's Italy.
Your dystopian description of the food supply and fake meat indicates that we'll have to go to Martha's Vineyard to get a real hamburger.
By the way, on Martha's Vineyard, great headline right now on Babylon Bee. I love it. It says, illegal migrants decline California Governor Newsom's offer of asylum in California since they just came from a collapsing communist hellhole in Venezuela with no electricity. Leave it to the Babylon Bee to just nail the issue. I'm sure these people would be like, California? No, no, we just came from California and Venezuela. No.
Yes, it's true. So we're coming up on a break, and we're going to come back with again with Mark Morano. And I'm going to ask Mark about the World Economic Forum. And I'm also going to ask, you know, the part of what he's describing is what many assign to the agenda of a basically now not very popular and hardly mentioned organization called the Council on Foreign Relations. And I'm going to ask him if there's a difference between the CFR and the World Economic Forum when we come back from this timeout. Stay tuned. I'm Scott Wheeler. You're listening to Through the Looking Glass on TNT Radio.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
Well, the tropics are the big deal. They were the big deal yesterday. They're a bigger deal now because we have a Category 4 typhoon that is going to be hitting Japan in a few days. And we're seeing a big pickup of activity in the Western Pacific, but they're developing in relatively close to the coast. We're not seeing these systems coming from way, way far out. And that's really interesting because we're seeing the same kind of thing in the Atlantic Basin. Look at Fiona. It hasn't been able to intensify. Eventually, next week when I'm talking to you about Fiona, and I think it's going to be up in the Bahamas, and then eventually you have to make up its mind if it wants to impact the eastern United States or go out to sea, it will become a strong storm. These are developing out of the main development regions because of the distortion of the warming that is taking place. So a lot of action in the tropics. Watch out in Japan. This is WeatherBell.com meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
How about some good news? There is a cure for hepatitis C. A simple blood test will tell you whether or not you have hepatitis C. More than 9 out of 10 people who receive highly effective treatment are cured and less likely to develop liver cancer or liver complications. One little blood test and you'll have done your part to help eliminate hepatitis C for good. Get tested, get treated, get cured. Visit hep.org for more information.
When the whole world seems turned upside down, we sort through it together.
Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Through the Looking Glass. I'm Scott Wheeler on TNT Radio. Joining me is author Mark Morano, author of the new book, The Great Reset. He's also the publisher of The Climate Depot, where he tracks and has been tracking for years environmental extremists and what they're up to. And it's the place, the best place to go anywhere to get information on this, on what the environmental extremists are up to. And going into the break, I mentioned I know you remember back in the 80s and perhaps even the 90s, the organization, the Council on Foreign Relations, was like a radioactive group. Everybody on the right suspected them of being involved in a conspiracy to undermine the United States and force us into a global government run by the UN. There were lots of conspiracy theories about the Council on Foreign Relations. What's the difference between that, the CFR, and the World Economic Forum, and why is the WEF more dangerous?
Great question. Yeah. I mean, obviously, Henry Kissinger was the big boogeyman back then. And there was interesting things. Like, I just saw a recent analysis. I think it was Jimmy Carter who ran. It was his presidency. He ran as an outsider. And they said every single cabinet member was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. But, you know, that's the kind of stuff you would hear back then. And the idea is you thought, okay, well, Jimmy Carter's presidency was captured. The difference there between now and then is, and don't get me wrong, there's a similar strain that runs through whether you're talking the Bilderbergs or the New World Order. And it all comes essentially, it's a United Nations sort of globalist philosophy, and it's anti-sovereignty. So when you hear about Council on Foreign Relations, the New World Order, back in the 80s and 90s, the big concern there was over sovereignty. And this was among rank and file people. A lot of this was led by the John Birch Society. You would hear all the you know, they were called conspiracy theories, right? The difference in the way this is done now, and it's verifiable, and that's why in my book, I try to use New York Times, USA Today, Newsweek, The Washington Post, the BBC, mainstream sources, because I'm writing this book for the skeptics of people who dismissed previous conspiracy theories, right? So the difference this time is, first of all, Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum were around in the 70s and 80s. They were just, you know, building their philosophy. They didn't have much power, but they, you know, they were just one of the many, I guess you would call, I hate to use the phrase globalist institutions, but anti-national sovereignty is really what I'm getting at when I use the word globalist. And that's what a UN,
I think, global, I think that's the right, I think that's the right word, globalist, because they do talk about integrating every nation into,
right,
into a kind of a common market. So globalism is the real word, is the right word. And so it's, and I, you know, the Council on Foreign Relations did talk about globalism a lot, and they were in favor of integrating it. It seemed like they petered out, like they did not have the power or the platform to impose their objectives on the countries of the world.
No.
Is this going to be different now?
Yeah, it's different now. Okay, let's focus on that. They just had sort of their, they did have power. They had a lot of cabinet members, but, you know, I remember back, like people like Tony Snow, they were a member. So a lot of these people would go to a meeting, or they would join, and they joined to a lot of different organizations. Didn't make them, you know, some Manchurian candidate or implant in a situation. But here's what the World Economic Forum has played this differently. And it's not just the World Economic Forum. I have a whole thing on the origins of this Great Reset concept. It's the idea of a confluence of events that have happened. And part of it are emergency powers. 9/11 brought us the emergency powers with terrorism and the Patriot Act. Now, the Patriot Act was ostensibly to go after, you know, find terrorists, but it turned out, and it's been in practical use more now, being justified surveillance on U.S. citizens by the U.S. government. So it normalized that. That's a key part of how we got here. COVID comes along in March of 2020. And we get emergency powers, which, by the way, Joe Biden is still extending. I mean, in the book, I go back and show how emergency powers, going back to the Roman Republic, through the Middle Ages, through 1933 Germany, and through many other countries, have caused the greatest abuses of human rights in civilization's history, from government against their own citizens. So with all of that happening fast, you also had a couple other trends. The whole woke trend, the whole Occupy Wall Street, the concept of making corporations care about the social good. So once you get rid of the profit motive, so all these companies became, in other words, 30 years ago, the liberals, the progressives railed on big business, the danger, they hated it, they were at war with them, right? Well, fast forward, the difference now is every corporate board in the world is in terror of woke climate activists, of woke ESG activists, of critical race theory activists, of transgender activists. In other words, the progressive lefts have captured corporate America. That's important. And the billionaire class, this is the other thing that's happened since the 70s and 80s. The rise of the billionaires, just the amount of billionaires that have been created since the COVID lockdowns, a record ever created, the greatest concentration of wealth into the fewest hands. Now I sound like Bernie Sanders, but it's an important point, though, is that these billionaires are buying up media, academia, foundations, and they're working with these woke activists. They've transformed corporate America. They've radicalized even further corporate media. They've radicalized even further our universities. And what they've done, and I actually have an expert on Eastern Europe, a quote in the book, who talks about the social pressure. In other words, to conform to the communist regulations and rules in Eastern Europe wasn't so much fear of getting killed or shot. It was actually not getting embarrassed by your neighbors. And that same shame and guilt was used with mask mandates, vax mandates, you know, anyone breaking the social distancing curfew. We saw that in modern times. So all of these things together, the rise of the billionaire and the left's dominance over corporate America, this has led to it. And then I say it's like the old seahorses you used to get in the mail in the 50s and 60s. You'd add water and they came to life. I still never understood how that worked. But what COVID lockdowns did was they activated all of this stuff, the New World Order, the Council on Foreign, the Bilderberg, all these weird strains of conspiracy theories going back decades And they actually came to life. So you literally had, as Jane Fonda said, COVID was God's gift to the left. You finally had one party Chinese style rule so you could cancel weddings, funerals, close churches, cancel travel, order stay at home orders, cancel school, close gyms. But hey, Walmart could be open and big tech would have the greatest advance. And these would be the greatest transfer of wealth from the poor and middle class to the wealthy upward. And this is what they never wanted to get rid of. And that's what I'm saying. That's why the Great Reset is real. It's happening. Since the last 2.5 years, we've seen unprecedented changes in our food supply, our energy, our transportation. I mean, they're just now, California as an example, no one voted to end the gas-powered car. That happened based on net zero climate goals pushed by the World Economic Forum, pushed by the United Nations. Governor Newsom did an executive order and an unelected California Air Resources Board followed through. People didn't vote on it. There was no legislator. There was no big famous California referendum. Same thing on every other aspect of this. We didn't vote to end. We didn't vote to end meat eating, but that's coming based on climate goals pushed by the World Economic Forum. We didn't want our kids eating insects, but that's already happening in Australia as 1,000 schools introduced cricket snacks to the kids, and they were told to go home and pester their parents to start eating insects as a replacement for meat. You know, so we didn't vote to end our free speech rights, but that's happening with corporate government collusion. So that's why the Great Reset is here. They've beaten us down. They've done enough psych ops on us, if you can use that word, psychological operations, to condition us to accept this new normal.
Well, you make a very compelling case that this belief, this thought process, and these ideas about top-down control have been around for a long time. But now there's the reshuffling of wealth has made it possible. Power and wealth
and it's
have
happening.
Made it to... And yeah, you can actually
happening.
See
you see it in your real life. Results. Thermostat controls on your house in Colorado, in California, in Spain, in Europe. You see it now where Australian bank just announced you can't get car loan for a gas-powered car. You can only get a car loan for an electric car. These are decisions you didn't make. You're going to be feeling them. You're seeing it in the price of energy. You're seeing it in the supply chain. You're seeing it in the price of food. Remember, the worse is better. That's the motto. Collapse current system. And what's their phrase? Build back better. Build back woke. Whatever phrase you want to use there.
The book is called The Great Reset. Mark Morano is the author. He joins us today. I want to point something out that it's been going on a long time, even going back to, well, you point out that it was Wilson, President Wilson, in over 100 years ago, where this authoritarian management class sort of bubbled up from the universities, where he had a lot. He was a university professor, and
yes,
he had a lot of professors on his in his cabinet. But it actually even goes back further to Plato's Republic, where Plato set forth the idea of basically a management state. Most people who study Greek history and study Plato and the philosophers think that Plato was mocking the idea, but these intellectuals or pseudo-intellectuals seem to grab on to this idea of the management state and think that Plato was saying this is how you run a society, rather than mocking and ridiculing the idea that you could actually have something like that happen. But I remember about midway through the pandemic, you called my attention to the environmentalists, the global environmentalists started talking about we're going to need climate lockdowns. And I'll be darned if it's not actually becoming a topic of discussion in governments around the world.
Yeah, I have two chapters in my book, The Great Reset, on this. And again, I would say what we're observing right now is not a conspiracy theory. We're observing conspiracy. We're conspiracy observers. And 2020 was the year conspiracy realities outnumbered conspiracy theories. In other words, every wacky, you can even say Alex Jones theory going back decades, not everyone, but a lot of them, like, wow, you know, I think it was trending on Twitter. Alex Jones is right. Now, he said a lot of, you know, questionable things, but I'm just saying some of his stuff about globalists, he's been very much pinning that. And so I bring that up as a joke, but the bottom line is the climate lockdowns themselves, That was a phrase coined by a European professor who's funded by Bill Gates and George Soros. Now, the reason I bring up the funding is this is someone the establishment supports, all of her workers, Mariana Mazzucato. She actually said, we may have to resort to climate lockdowns unless we transform society quickly. And her version of climate lockdowns was exactly described Joe Biden's first term in office in America. And it's stunning. I mean, they go through, they say there's going to be severe energy restrictions. We're going to have severe food restrictions. We're going to have transportation. We're going to have all these other restrictions. I mean, she described a dystopian vision of what we've been living through. And the key on these whole climate lockdowns is this isn't just some crackpot theory. We have 230 medical journals endorsing the concept of essentially an energy lockdown based on the template of COVID lockdowns. We have the Harvard School of Medicine now saying COVID unchecked climate change will lead to more COVIDs. Therefore, we need aggressive action on climate. In other words, if you don't support the Green New Deal, according to Harvard Medical School now, you are a grandma killer because unchecked climate change will lead to more viruses, which will kill more people. It's gotten to the point now where we have academics in Australia wanting to add climate change as a cause of death on death certificates. We have a doctor, the head of the emergency room department in a hospital in Canada, who now formed a doctor's group. First medically diagnosed case of climate change, a woman who came in suffering from heat stroke. So they want to get to that quest where you're going to turn on CNN and see daily and yearly climate death tolls, all to justify what can only be described in their words as a climate lockdown or an energy lockdown. And we actually had the UK president 2 weeks ago, Scott, actually say we need 2 weeks to flatten the energy curve. So they're coming up with unbelievable. In Switzerland, they're threatening to jail people up to 3 years if they heat their homes too warm in the winter. And this is our new reality. And a lot of this has to do geopolitically. All the European countries pursued net zero while increasing their reliance on Putin. Putin must be laughing his bottom off right now at the rest of Europe as they were beholden to him. And I guess in the case of Germany, 50% of their energy was coming from Russia. And he can now have the ultimate, you know, power over them. And Donald Trump warned Europe, particularly Germany, about this situation, and all the Germans laughed at him. You can watch two separate occasions where the Germans are laughing when Donald Trump is warning about their countries. Germany probably be the most reliant country in Europe on Russian energy. It makes no sense from a geopolitical point of view, but it makes perfect sense from these politicians who were virtue signaling to the net zero agenda. And the whole goal is they know the green energy can't replace it. A great analogy is they're banning energy that works, saying we have something here that will work. So it's like you're jumping out of an airplane and someone's assuring you, don't worry, we're assembling a giant, you know, mattress on the ground. When you hit, it's all going to be set. And of course, green energy is years, if not decades away from ever even coming close to replacing fossil fuels.
How much are people willing to take, do you think? Is there going to be some kind of great pushback? Do you see that coming, or what do you think is going to happen?
Well, keep in mind, I wrote this book as a cautionary tale. I opened, first of all, with Twilight Zone's Rod Serling. I just got some book reviews back. People are calling it an entertaining book. I tried to make it fun. So this isn't all doom and gloom. I always say this is our future if we allow it. I opened the whole last chapter. I open with Václav Klaus, the former Czech president, who talks about the similarities between what he experienced most of his life growing up in communism versus the COVID agenda of lockdowns and the Great Reset agenda. And he says they were the same thing. They just called them different things. The communists didn't want people to congregate. They didn't want people to assemble. They were worried about protests. And if you look at what happened during COVID, whether it was Canada, the Freedom Convoy, on down the line. So I give all the warnings about digital banking. I mean, Trudeau had the Freedom Convoy vaccine protesters in Canada. Truckers declared essentially enemies of the state or a terrorist element, so that banks, he worked with banks, corporate government collusion, and these truckers lost access to their own money. If you baked donuts for them, you lost access to your own money. The GoFundMe pages were shut down. All of this corporate government collusion. So what I talk about is You have to fight back at every level. What Václav Klaus, the former Czech president, says is you have to resist at every level. And that includes wearing the mask, getting vaccine, following the mandates according to social distancing. That means don't get caught up. Buy a gas-powered car if for no other reason than to stick it to the net zero climate agenda. On every level, fight at the school board. I detail in the book how parents at the school board level led to the toppling of Democrat machines, particularly in Virginia, which then led to the National Democratic Party freaking out, which then led to the ending of vax and mask mandates in every major liberal city. So parents at the school board caused that chain of reaction. And that's the kind of thing we need, is fighting back. And we need a Republican Party willing to challenge all these narratives. And unfortunately, Mitch McConnell and Kevin McCarthy are not the two people to do that.
Well, you've been listening to Mark Morano. He is the author of an excellent book called The Great Reset. He's also the publisher of The Climate Depot. And Mark, thank you so much for taking the time and explaining to us about The Great Reset.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate it.
That does it. You hear the music to wind out the hour. I'm Scott Wheeler for TNT Radio. You've been listening to Through the Looking Glass. Until next time.